Hey everyone, welcome back to the Boyola Podcast, and today we have a special episode featuring an interview with Joe Dorado from Stemera Softworks, who works on Astroneer. Take a listen. So first off, say your name, what you do, and your title.
My name is Joe Dorado, and I handle all marketing and communications at Stemera, and my title is communications. That's it.
Not like Madonna, just communications. So we are talking about Astroneer. Mm-hmm. It's one of those games that it's been amazing to watch y'all grow and watch a community grow around it, because I think we've seen you now at like almost every little convention we've been to and the big ones. So what's it been like for Astroneer to have this growth since launch?
It's been really cool. I mean, there was this initial like explosion of, you know, excitement at launch, and when you have like these huge YouTubers playing your game and you never would have thought. I think I've told this story before, but like they were like, oh, we'll sell, you know, a couple, maybe 100,000 units in the first year, and that'll be like great for us because we're just doing early access, and that version of the game was so thin. Yeah. At least in their perspective, they had this humongous explosion that they were not expecting, and then having to then maintain that while also trying to find new people and new audiences has been fun, and like it's been working, so that's good.
So for those who don't know, Astroneer is like a science fiction, mm-hmm, adventure, open world, survival-ish.
Yes.
What separates Astroneer from the other open world, you know, games out there right now?
I think the biggest thing for us is we focus on the actual, we want to make the game feel like a toy. We want it to feel like very physical and fun. In a way that other games don't necessarily do.
Yeah.
We have deep systems and we have really cool things, and there's a lot of breadth up to what you can do. But while you're doing all that stuff, you're having a lot of like really small moments of joy of like the thing snaps together and it does the thing that you want it to do. And you come up with a crazy idea of a thing to power your base, and like, and you go and do it and you like engineer it yourself. Whereas a lot of games kind of have like specific paths of you just go down this tech tree, you know, like punch 100 trees, and then like once you're done, you get all the things. We don't want that. That's not something that we're really into. So the focus was to make a game that felt like a toy, felt very physical, felt like a digital version of something that you might play when you're a younger kid. And yeah, I think why we've been successful is because people sit down and the first time they snap something together and it works, and the first time they think, oh, I can just do this and it works, you get those gears turning and you start to like think of all the things you can do. And I think it's different in that way. Just yeah. Like it sparks your imagination and like your sort of creativity in a way that other games maybe don't.
Yeah, I mean, just watching people play and then playing on the floor and then, you know, playing a little bit at home, like one of the things that I've noticed, it doesn't feel like work, and a lot of open world survival games are work.
Right.
Big time work. Like, okay, I'm going to log on for the next 2 hours. I'm going to water my crops. I'm going to fill up my defenses. Yeah. I'm going to blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And now all my playtime went to work. How did y'all balance the aspects of, you know, keeping up power and your oxygen while also making sure that that creativity and that you know, it's a toy, that fun piece is forward? How did you find that right balance?
I think it took up some time, and honestly early access really helped with that, because it would have been very easy during early access to just like add another bigger version of the thing and you just do four times instead of doing it two times.
Yeah.
So early access really helped us figure out that like, hey, we can make systems that are really deep, and if you want to engage with those, go ahead and do it, but you don't have to. It's not required that you need to like farm 100 things or like, you know, do like missions over and over and over again just to get the kind of stuff that you want. I think one of our sort of ethos, like the thing that we try and do as a team, is reduce the friction of you just like having fun and trying to separate out game fun and then just like tediousness, and saying, okay, how can we get rid of the tediousness while still keeping it fun and also making it rewarding? Because if you make things really easy, it gets super easy to just say, oh, take away all the grinding, and then like, wait, now you're not having fun because you're not enjoying, like you're not succeeding at anything, and you're just being given everything. So we try and focus on taking out the friction that you might see in another game, like something as simple as you don't press a pause menu, you don't navigate through tabs to get to your inventory. It's like, I see the thing I want, it's in my backpack all the time. I think that's kind of what we try and focus on whenever we're designing a new system. There are things that you have to do for sure, and we have like, you have to go to a certain planet to build certain things. But the fun of that is saying, okay, I need to find this rare resource, and then like the journey of getting there. It's not necessarily about that moment of like getting the thing. It's all the fun that you're having, like, you know, getting there and figuring out how to get there. So we try to focus on that versus just adding artificial, you know, blockers ahead of you that just say like, no, repeat this same thing over and over. A lot of people are playing WoW right now.
Yeah.
I feel like it's interesting. I get why people played it, and I get why people are playing it now, but that kind of gameplay to me is just not rewarding, right? You're just, you're literally just farming things over and over and over again in a way that like, I don't know if people now are necessarily liking it as much as they did back then, you know, like the rose colored glasses of that thing. I think a lot of people are bouncing off of it and going, wait, I just have to kill this, you know, boar 100 times. So I think we've grown as an industry since then, and we're trying to like figure out cool creative ways of giving you fun avenues to play the game without just adding unnecessary friction.
Yeah, because I think that's another, that's a barrier to like accessibility to different age groups and different, you know, play styles, honestly. And I think that's one of the things why we fell out of our survival games, and we don't have an intention of going back, because I can't spend 6 hours making sure my base is defended, log off, and be completely crushed when somebody raids me.
Exactly.
I'm past that point. I can't do it. But one of the beautiful things that I've noticed at y'all's booth here at PAX is there's such a wide age demographic. Like while we were waiting for you, we saw a kid playing and a kid leave, and he was super happy. But then I like see adults playing and like us playing, and I was like, okay, can we just keep digging? Just keep digging. We don't have anywhere to go. Just keep digging. That's something beautiful. And I think hitting that all ages piece is something that is really tough to pull up. Is that something that y'all have been cognizant of, or has it changed as the game has kind of gone through this expansion and development of the community?
Definitely been something that they thought about since the beginning. The founders of the company all have kids, and so they're very like active in that thing where they'll bring a build home and play with, you know, Brendan will bring a build home, play with his son for a little bit and see, and his son's like probably too young to play the game. But I think we try and do, like I was mentioning earlier, it's like the base level of the game, the stuff that is enjoyable to do, anyone can do it, right?
Yeah.
But maybe building a humongous solar farm and then using that to power 50 research platforms or whatever is not necessarily accessible to a 4-year-old, but that's okay. Like they can still have fun doing all the basic stuff and digging and exploring and finding rare stuff. And so there's kind of that like initial wave of fun stuff that's there, the core of it. And then there's like the ceiling, which most people are not going to see anyway. And it's not, it's not required to do those things in order to like have a nice time. And so I think some games do that where they say all the good stuff is like over here, way up high, and a 4-year-old is not going to reach that.
Right? Yeah.
And a 6-year-old kid who maybe like their parents let them play a couple hours a week isn't going to ever enjoy that fun stuff. So we try and balance like, here's a thing that you can do, here's a thing that you can aspire to get later, and if you never get there, you're still having fun like in the early game type thing. So yeah, it's been definitely a focus. I think part of why we have a game that's nonviolent is because it's for that reason. Like, we don't want to just make the core gameplay about just like shooting a space cow a lot of times and like making ham and eating ham. So Yeah, I think that it's the same thing. It's like we get a lot of people who play with their, like, they bring their kid into the game and they start enjoying it together. And it's like, that's what we want. That was the whole goal the entire time. So,
yeah. I was describing the game to somebody at the booth the other day, or we were just talking, and I was like, the art style just kind of feels like a hug. Mm-hmm. Like, it just invites you in. Like, it's bright and it's warm and it's like, it has like its own life. And it's very different when you see, like, I mean, especially in indie games, there are a whole bunch, and there's nothing against them, whole bunch of really dark, gritty Metroidvanias and like everything, and then you have, you know, Astroneer, which is bright and welcoming. Mm-hmm. And what went into kind of refining that style and kind of making this it's recognizable.
Yeah,
like it's noticeable.
That was actually something that changed in a humongous way throughout the development of the game, because the first demos of the game, like the first vertical slices, were really desolate, and it was like no multiplayer. You were a solo astronaut on a planet, and like you didn't have any contact with home, and you were just like, where they focused on the like solo part of it. Mm-hmm. And while that was cool, it's definitely been done, right? It's definitely, you know, if you think about space in your head right now, it's a cold, dark, lonely place with no life at all, right? And so, is that fun? I don't know if that is. And I think plenty of other people have explored that side of it. And so it was really easy then after sort of seeing that initial thing and saying, hey, this is fun, but this has happened before, to then go, let's just own the whimsical side of the thing. What happens if you go to a planet and maybe it doesn't make sense that there's like super bright pinks on this thing, but like it looks good and it feels good, and you want to enjoy that thing. And so it's just another avenue of a place where we can pull you into the game in a way that isn't necessarily gameplay, but still makes every moment to moment thing that you're doing really enjoyable and nice and like feel good. And so, a tree that you see or a biome that you come across, it's not changing. You're not like making that thing, but when you come across it, you're like happy, nice. And then you go across the horizon and you see another cool biome and another cool area. And at their core, they are the same thing, right? It's a color, it's different plant, it's some different like attributes like wind and solar, but just being able to add that really nice polish on top of that just makes you want to keep exploring all that much more. So,
and speaking about wanting to keep exploring, why don't we talk about some of the new additions that are coming?
So exploration updates coming next week. Really excited about this. We've actually been working on this for a long time. There's this really funny thing where we put on our roadmap that we were adding a personal mobility object to the game. That was like our code name for the jetpack. And everyone in our community was like, it's space rollerblades. And we were like, what?
How did you get here?
But also like, why don't we do that? It's not space rollerblades, it's a jetpack. But I think right now we're having a lot of fun fleshing out areas of the game that we want to have that we didn't necessarily have before. And so Astroneer is a very like home base experience. There's so many things to do, but the core gameplay loop is like exploring a little bit further and then coming back and then exploring a little bit further than that and then coming back to your home base. Otherwise you have to build a lot of infrastructure just to do the core stuff in other places. Yeah. So this thing focuses on like, you're a nomad. You can do all of those things, but on the go, you don't necessarily have to build a lot of infrastructure, because some players love that, but some like don't want to. They don't want to build, you know, 10 solar panels again to do the same thing. And so, well, like I said, we now have a lot of room to just say, hey, here's an area that's unexplored for us that we wanted to do. Let's just go for it. And so this entire update's focused on letting you get around the world easier, letting you explore further without a lot of friction. And and then like trying a different play style, trying to, you know, get out there and see more things that maybe you haven't seen before. There's a lot of data actually from internally of where like most players don't ever leave the first planet. Like they're just there. And that's like, I get why. Your home is there. Everything you know is on that planet. And so we're trying to encourage a lot of people to say, hey, you can go further and it's
go
okay.
Go out of state for college.
Yes. Exactly. We're trying to kick people out of the nest.
We'll always be here. You can come back.
Yes.
But
this place is not going anywhere. So,
do you have any? You always like to ask like one question, so.
You kept taking all my questions.
See, I was prepared.
Well, that's why I said, can I have the list? So I knew what you were going to ask so I could interview with my questions.
Like two of those I just added because it made sense with what he was talking about. But
that's fine.
I will say, I guess, obviously you kind of touched on a bit, but kind of, I'm trying to think how to say this. What were some of the challenges of like making just an exploration game with like just yourself so you didn't feel lonely in the game?
I think the art style is definitely a big layer of that, where if you have that dark, desolate thing, you just put that emotion on the player. But there's a lot of different layers there too, where like our music is pretty lighthearted, pretty fun. The like way we talk about the game and like how all the visuals and a lot of time we describe the game as like the art style is a mixture between like Playmobil, like kids' toys, but then also like IKEA and NASA together.
Yeah.
And so even all of those kinds of things, it's like you're interacting with a thing that feels very lighthearted, and you don't have that existential like dread of like I'm by myself in space, because you're like, oh, I'm having fun here and everything's safe. If I want to be in danger, I'm opting into that, and I'm not like, it's not coming for me, right? There's no creepers coming into your base to like blow everything up. It's hard to answer because like every layer of it was intentionally made to get away from that original prototype, original demo, which was cool but definitely gave you a lot of scary stuff. Yeah. I guess they're starting.
No, we got an hour.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I was like,
this thing's still recording.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Well.
I always get nervous.
Yes.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. So I guess I do have a question. Because you talk about the variety of play styles, whether you want to stay here, what is your play style that you prefer?
I've said this before. I'm like a weird underground cave dweller. I love that I can. And it's weird because that's actually, I was talking to someone about this yesterday and they were like, that's actually what we'll do in space eventually. Like, we're not going to build walls on top of a planet. We'll use the planet itself to like shield us from radiation, shield us from all the harsh, you know, sort of stuff. And so my play style is get underground, find a nice big cavern that like has a lot of room for me to grow into. And then I still need solar power, right? I still need wind power, but I just pipe all that stuff in from the surface. I love that part of it, and I love the challenge of that. But I also, when I first started playing the game, I was the opposite, and I was like, I want to have a mountain, you know, top thing where I could see everything. It was a little more dangerous then because, you know, we didn't have a jetpack and we didn't have anything like that. And so building the infrastructure to go up a mountain meant like switchbacks that were like really annoying. And then like if you drive your rover off a cliff, now you're completely in a bad spot. So yeah, I'm more focused on, I like home base and I like infrastructure and I like setting challenges for myself that are, other people might look as more like engineering type, and I just love that idea of like I have my switches, and then we added like the thing where I could siphon power between things and say, oh, it's nighttime, and I like know that it's nighttime, so let me switch to wind power, that kind of thing.
I feel like you two would get along playing in a game, honestly.
So you have not made it to the other planets?
No, I have. I mean, because you know, to make the splitter, you need a certain resource, which is over there, but I only do it just to get the or. In my most recent playthrough, I was like, I really like the cave layer on a specific planet, and so I like want to make my home there. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna bootstrap myself, gonna get myself over to Glacio, and then I'm gonna go underground on the tundra planets. That way, I can be warm and like chill in this biome that's like really cool. So, yeah.
So I guess for people that play survival games, and I'm sure you get this asked a lot about. So kind of like, what is the end goal? Is there an end goal?
Yeah. So in 1.0, we added this whole, it's not a narrative, it's not like a story, it's more like high level goals that like you get breadcrumb throughout the world, so we don't explicitly push you towards those things. I think we definitely were focused on like, it's a sandbox game, like you should have fun there, but we also get, like I said earlier, we're trying to get to different play styles and reach more people, and so there are people who don't want that. They want to have a waypoint, right? They want to have a goal that like is explicit. And so we added these like huge structures into the world that are built into the narrative of Astroneer and the fiction of it. And we don't explicitly like tell you much about them. You're just kind of like going through and you might run across one in your normal gameplay and then go like, wait, what is that? Let me go like poke it and like see what it is. And you know, is it dangerous? Is it scary? We don't necessarily tell you. And so that thing ends up, if you interact with it once, it starts to tell you more about all of them in the whole like area. And then there is like eventually a culmination there where it, like there's credits and there's like an end cutscene and stuff. So there is, you can like quote unquote beat the game. But it doesn't mean that like the game's over. It just means that like you did that one really long mission and then you can get back to like now doing the other stuff. So we like doing that. It's not necessarily something that we wanted or thought about in the beginning, but realized that like, yeah, there are millions of people out there who aren't just going to like make engineering goals for themselves. So like, let's let them have fun and push towards that goal and then, yeah, the content.
And on the show floor, the demo has the camera. Is that coming or is that already in it?
So that'll be in the exploration update too.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm really stoked about that. Yeah. Cause we had that update this summer, which was like tied to the Apollo LM thing. And we added the camera on there kind of as like a fun commemorative moment. It's like, hey, take a photo with the lander, which is on our moon in the solar system. And afterwards we realized like, wait, we have this technology now, we built it. You just press a button and it takes a photo. Like, we can put that on a thing and then you could take it anywhere. And so we'll continue iterating on that thing. But we realized, you know, going back to the art style thing, we have a beautiful game, a lot of scenic stuff, and we had no real way for you to like document your adventures. And we still do it in our own way. It's like not just like press F12 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like you put the camera down, you set it there, deliberately set up your scene, and like take a photo. So yeah, same thing. It's like we saw an opportunity to expand on the game and we just like went for it. So.
So we have the exploration update is the jetpack, the camera, and was there anything else?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of platforms and modules and like storages that you can use that like are fit into your backpack. So there's a lot of focus on like, I can take this thing and I can put a packager on it and it'll fold down into a one slot item that you can then put in your backpack and take with you. The biggest one there, I think, is we added like, we were trying to figure out how to make like a tent in the game, but you can't really do that in space. And so we made this like basically a smaller version of the habitat that's movable. And it, you like set it on the ground and it does this really cute animation of like, poof, poof, and it expands. It's like your space pod. And that thing is how you explore and build infrastructure like easily. So that thing folds into a box that goes in your backpack. And so you go to the top of a mountain, you bring a couple of tools with you, you set that thing up. You don't have to put a tether line that goes from your base all the way up the mountain because that thing generates oxygen. So you just like set it down, put a couple of tethers, set up your thing, get what you need to get, and then like pack all that up in your backpack, things go. So that's like the fiction of it at least. But yeah, we added that. I'm trying to think what else. There's a couple of, oh, we added a small item, but I really love this. We added glow sticks to the game.
Oh, that's cool.
Like exploration glow sticks. So you like put them on your backpack and while you're running, you just like press a button and it like cracks it and like puts it on the ground. It sticks it there. And they only last for, I think it's a couple of minutes, but same sort of idea. Yeah. Like maybe I don't want to burn a bunch of tethers getting down here and then have to pick them all up. It's like, no, I'll just drop a glow stick. It'll run out. It will give me all of the benefits of like having a light and not losing my way without having to commit to building a bunch of things and then pulling them out when you realize like, oh wait, this cave's a dead end, or like this doesn't have what I want. So same sort of idea, like lighter, less friction items that can like allow you to just keep going, and they're super cheap and easy to make. Like requires a very plentiful resource. So yeah, and we're gonna expand on all of that stuff too. So
So I don't really have a last question, but I do like to say one of my main things that I wrote up about this game, obviously we already talked about it, is the fact there are no weapons and you're just based on exploration. And so I just want to say that is amazing. I really enjoy that.
Thanks, yeah. It's funny because when they first were pitching the idea, I wasn't there, I didn't work at the time, but they told me when they were first pitching the idea to people were like, you're insane. You're going to make a space game without guns? You're going to make a space game without aliens that you can shoot? I'm like, yeah, actually. And it did create a challenge for sure. A lot of games rely on combat and rely on destruction of life specifically to make the game. That's the focus of it, and then everything else is kind of just built on top of that. And we wanted the game to be really accessible, and we wanted it to be realistic, right? If I landed on a new planet in a new galaxy, I wouldn't get out of my spaceship and start shooting everything. Yeah. Right? I would be doing science. I would be trying to figure out what is going on. If you saw a space cow dog, you wouldn't take your laser out and blow it away. You'd be like, I need to learn about this. I need to understand
it. I would try to make it my pet.
Right.
Exactly. And live with it and figure out how to give it the best life possible.
Exactly. And so I think it's easy for developers to just sort of fall into that trope, and people like it and they know it, but for us it just didn't make sense at all, actually from the fiction of it, but then also philosophically we're just not into that idea. Yeah. Forcing ourselves to do what everyone else does. So our founder, one of the founders, the general manager on the team, he always talks about how we picked a couple things that we wanted to do and do the hardest version of those things. And one of those was the procedural generation thing, especially considering our planets are spherical and there's gravity all the way around and it's simulated in that way. That's one of them. The UI thing, diegetic UI, it's super difficult to make it physically in the game because it's very easy to just make a square with boxes and you just drag things over, right? But that's boring and it's not fun.
It's immersion breaking. And in surviving, and in a lot of survivors, it's clunky.
Yes.
And huge. And
there's so many items.
You out of it. Yeah.
That's another thing, right? All of our items are visually quite distinct. So that way you don't have to know some really bespoke random term. You can just go the game is telling me I need the red thing. Okay, I'll get the red thing and I'll bring it over here and I'll plug it in and then it works. We definitely added more resources in 1.0 just for that depth of content. But even then, they all have really distinct looks. They all have makes sense in the fiction of space. And so it created a challenge because doing that in a physical space means eventually you're just going to have too many items and you don't have a place to store them, which is why a lot of other games just say you just press a pause menu and then the thing is just numbers, right? It's just a picture with a bunch of numbers next to it. That's the easier way to go, and that's why people do it, and a lot of people like that kind of thing, but not interested in having 5 menus to scroll through and then plug a thing in here and drag it here and play the jigsaw game. And some people like that stuff too. That's just not interesting.
And other people download mods to auto sort their inventories.
Exactly. How many survival games have you played that have mods that make the UI completely different and much more friendly? It happens all the time. So. What was the last really difficult thing we did? There's so many of them. And then the combat thing, right? Okay. So, whenever we talked about that, it was we got to figure out a way to make this fun without having that layer of it that is just mindless slaughtering of whatever it is. And we actually still have certain moments where we have to reconcile that with the planet itself, because the planet is a non-renewable resource in the game. And you're walking around with your space, vacuum, and you're destroying the terrain and cutting down trees and that kind of thing. And we've gotten that feedback before, and I think it's definitely something that we're looking at and saying, hey, how can we scratch that itch for people to say, you can still do all the things, and you might dig up some soil, but you can replenish it, or you can make sure that you can play the game without having to destroy the trees if that's something that you don't want to do. So, yeah.
And this is more of a comment than a question, but it's one of those things when we look at exploration as a whole, or how we interact with our environment, how we interact in the real world, a lot of it is about destruction. A lot of it is, what can we force this thing to do to us? What can we, you know, what do we get out of that thing? And a lot of that, that wonder and that conservation is kind of like, it's falling by the wayside. Yeah. And I do think games like the Astroneer and Astroneer really helps builds that sense of exploration and that curiosity. Mm-hmm. And you're also, especially because you do have an all ages group, like you're reinforcing in kids, like, explore.
Yeah.
Work with it. You don't, like, I did not like killing penguins for polymer.
Right,
I hated it so much. Like, I don't mind combat in my games, but like, don't make me kill the cutest thing that there is and then give me more if it's a baby one. Like, no, like, I don't like that. But it's also like, and sometimes it's a reality, you know, but also those things aren't renewable.
Right.
And I'm definitely really happy that Astroneer, in the same way Matt is like, it's about exploration, like, is kind of reinforcing that idea.
Yeah, definitely not interested in having that be a core tenet of the game, for sure. And that's also why we've taken our time to add like actual fauna to the game.
Yeah.
There's none right now. There's all like there's some flora and like there's aggressive kinds and then there's normal kinds, but it's definitely there, and we're trying to figure out and working on ways to have it be really cool and enjoyable and fit within the sort of fiction of the game without having it be like, I enslave all of the you know, space dinosaurs and I make them do my bidding. Like, we want to always approach it from the science angle of like, if I were to do this thing, what would I actually do next? And we can't do all of those things, but we can do a lighter version of that that makes you feel like you're doing science, you're doing things that are helping humanity or, you know, the world that you're in, and not just like exploiting everything. So we actually used to have the word exploit in our... The first pitches of the game were more of like, it was a gold rush. It was like, you're going to these far-flung places to the, because it's like the 25th century gold rush type thing. And same sort of idea was like, don't really know if we like that.
Yeah.
You know? And we completely changed the whole tone and idea to say, you're not exploiting this thing. You're actually here to do science and learn about it. And there's a bit of friction there, and I don't want to give too much away because the company you work for is a space, you know, basically huge corporation thing. Yeah. And so there's a bit of that there that we'll, we have explored and we'll continue to do because, like, I like that idea where in the future, I mean, we're seeing it now in space companies.
Yeah.
They are private companies are becoming the people who are having the most gains in their technology and getting further and further out. And I have a feeling that that's not going to change.
You know? Yeah.
Governments and where there is red tape, there's going to be sort of stagnation in technology, and people who just have a lot of money can just move way faster. And so do we trust that the people who are in charge of there are not going to exploit space? I don't know.
You know?
And that part, that fiction is really interesting to us. So I think it's something that we'll explore more of in the future.
Awesome. Well, that's all we have. I mean, if you want to, you know, tell everybody when the exploration patch is coming, update is happening, and then where they can find you and where they can get, you know, find Astroneer.
Yeah, astroneer.space is the website that has all the links to things.
I did not know that it was .space. That's amazing.
Yeah, they were looking for domain names, and it was like, wait, .space is available? Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So that's the website, Astroneer Game on all the social media stuff. The exploration update is coming out on the 4th, which is this coming Wednesday, and that'll be for both platforms. And then also next week, I think it'll be within the next like 2 weeks, we're going to update our roadmap, which will basically lay out all of the updates for the rest of the year. We said during early access that we were going to do like just keep updating the game for free, basically, because we're still selling a lot of units and we're still like, it's still staying popular. We were in like the top last in the summer sale. We were like number one for a couple days. Yeah. So
it was amazing to watch you guys win
fan choice
the voice.
Players'
voice at South by Southwest. Like that was
amazing. Surprised by that. It was like, I mean, we were really happy to be at South by. but to go there and promote the show, obviously, and then like have a bunch of people show up with our gear on and like have influencers come up and be like, oh, I streamed your game. I'm like, of course, I know that. I saw you. was amazing. And like, then we went to the Webbies after that. I won a bunch of those and our community like rallied behind us. So yeah, it's, we're doing well. And so that means we don't have to change our business model and we can just keep updating the game for free, knowing that there's new players coming in. It's kind of off the wall. I feel like other companies right now would say, hey, we have a captive audience of 2 million plus people who have purchased this. How can we get more money? You know, how can we like add more ways for them to buy things? And that's smart, but ethically, you know, we're a small team. We are just happy to be here. Eventually, we'll have to figure out a way to, I talk about this all the time, where it's like, if you bought the game in 2016 for $19.99 and it's 2020, maybe we should try and figure out a way for you to spend a little more money as a business to sustain ourselves. But right now, we're not in that position and we don't have to. So, you know, we'll figure it out later. But anyway, bunch of free content for the end of the year. Well, there's a humongous update that I can't say talk much about that will launch on November 15th with PlayStation. The one thing that will be in there is dedicated servers, which I'm really stoked about.
Yeah.
So we're working with Nitrado. They're going to be providing our servers. And you can just like in the game rent one and then just like jump in and invite your friends, and that will always be running, which is cool. So that plus a humongous update, which we'll talk about next week. Yeah, I'm just super excited to just like keep adding more fun stuff, making people happy and selling more copies and, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, that's basically the rest of the year for us.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.